your study of black bear behavior is much more hands-on than the approach that others would take. So explain how closely you interact with these bears.
Well, you know, the cubs that I've worked with for my research are the very young cubs that come to me before they have any experience with a mother outside the den. These are bottle feeders. These are cubs that would be habituated to me regardless of how I handle them. So my experience with them is very intimate. They're all over me. They treat me as a mother. And, you know, I've taken them for long walks in the forest, documented their juvenile behavior, and use that to understand their adult behavior.
And you have them staying right in your home with you.
Well, they start out, they come in March, you know, they got to be warm. They don't have any way of heating themselves. And our pens that we raise them in are away from the house. But in the colder temperatures, we have them in the house.
So how have you been able to develop such a close working relationship with them?
They're highly intelligent animals, and they form a bond naturally, and that bond, as long as I have access to them, maintains. The main bear that I work with, Squirty, is now 18 years old and will be giving birth to her 10th set of cubs in the wild this winter.
Was there ever a point where you were fearful of being this close to cubs or bears?
Well, I wouldn't say fearful, but I have to be very cautious. You know, bears, because of their intelligence, they can act in ways that people deem as unpredictable. Squirty, for example, and the other cubs that I've raised, because I've raised them as a surrogate mother, treat me like a bear.
Mm-hmm.
And Squirty has her rules, and she also judges and punishes. So if I'm not careful, I get bit. And so I have to behave myself. The other bears that I work with, her offspring and the other wild bears, are all intimidated by me. And so they're a lot easier to deal with.
It was generally believed that bears are solitary beings, but you've discovered otherwise. What have you learned about how they interact with one another?
Well, what I learned about bears was that the closest thing that they have to a territory is a female home range, and she needs a high-quality area in order to give birth and raise cubs. And these female home ranges are evenly dispersed on the landscape. They abut each other. And their food supply are the highest quality foods in the forest, the nuts, berries, ants, bees, and grubs. And these foods are generally available in patches and are affected by the weather. And they're unevenly dispersed on the landscape. So at any given time, one female bear may have a huge surplus in her home range and her immediate neighbor can have nothing. And this has led to a system of sharing over time. So these bears have what I feel is reciprocal altruism with all its components of judgment, punishment, and the like.
Well, you even write that every aspect of a bear's behavior is rooted in their need to share food. So does this mean that mating and protection of the young play no part in their behavior?
Well, everything plays a part in their behavior, but to have a system of sharing and it, I believe, parallels the human behavior of reciprocal altruism, there have to be certain components. And if you're an altruist, you have to have some means of mitigating cheating, and that comes with judgment and punishment. And you don't see this in most animals. You know, you have a dog and you raise it as a pet. You can abuse your dog and he doesn't retaliate. He doesn't bite you. He doesn't judge you. He's just a loyal companion. Mm. Well, a young bear cub manipulates you to make sure you take care of it properly. They bite and they have good behavior. They're like a human child. They, you know, that cries and smiles in order to manipulate their parents to take care of them.
Now, this is a society that is dominated by females. So where does that leave the males?
Well, the males are harder to study, but I figured out the best way to study males was to use trail cameras to monitor the males that were in my female home ranges, in or around my female home ranges. And I would set out a monitoring camera with a small amount of corn, generally a gallon bag, the amount one bear could eat easily. And it wasn't unusual to set up in a clear cut where there was a lot of bear activity in the summer. And film 8 or 10 different male bears. And I took an awful lot of pictures before I finally figured out what they were doing. But in 2008, I set up in a clear cut that was about 16 years old, right at the end of its productivity. And I got my usual 8 or 10 different males. And in 2009, I set my cameras up in the same place, and the only bear there was the resident female. And in 2008, I had an awful lot of pictures of two males in front of the camera at the same time sharing that small amount of corn. And I realized that these were friendships and coalitions. And I knew these bears weren't brothers because I'd done the genetic pedigree of all the bears in my study area, and the male population was genetically unrelated. So I realized that these bears were forming loose groups of friends to overpower the females to have access to surplus foods in their home range.
Is there much communication then between bears and other species in the wild?
Well, bears are interested in bears, just like dogs are interested in dogs and people are interested in people. Mm-hmm. It's always interesting that only people think everybody's interested in them. But you know, they interact with other animals. They're not crazy about coyotes, and they will often, if a deer and a bear come together, they'll both run in opposite directions. Turkeys sometimes will be afraid of bears, and other times they'll feed nearby. So.
Now, you've been studying bears for years. How long did it take you to get a sense of how bears communicate with one another?
Well, I've been documenting. I've kept field notes, copious field notes, for the last 20 years. And working with the cubs was a real advantage in understanding vocalizations, and especially olfactory scent communication, mm-hmm. because I could take the cubs for walks in the forest and see their exaggerated response to scent. But it takes a long time to understand what the meaning is of all the different types of vocalizations that they make. And some of them very obviously were negative. The was a negative vocalization. And then there was things like false charging and swatting, mm-hmm. That I realized were intentional communications. These were much like our language. You know, we have an emotional utterance in our language is comes from our central nervous system that reflects our mood and our state of mind. And then we have a mechanical manipulation of our lips, teeth, tongue, and larynx. So we can lie with our words, but if you read our facial expressions and our intonation of our voice, you can tell where we're coming from. The bears have this distinct difference between emotional communication and intentional communication. So when they false charge, the meaning of that false charge is based on the context of the situation. They have only a limited means of communicating. So if you're walking on a trail and a female bear false charges you, and that means she rushes at you, swats the ground, and expels a big blast of air, she's trying to delay confrontation long enough for communication to take place. Now, if you're working at a restaurant and you're carrying a pail of food scraps out to the dumpster and a bear false charges you, he simply wants you to drop the pail of food scraps before you put it in the dumpster. Hmm.
Now, there's another thing that's really quite fascinating. There is a part of a bear that is now called the Killam organ. So what is it and how did you discover it?
Well, it's an organ that is an accessory organ to the vomeronasal system. And the bears, like your dogs at home, have two olfactory systems, the vomeronasal system that goes to the accessory olfactory lobe of the brain and the nasal epithelium that goes to the olfactory lobe of the brain. The vomeronasal system identifies scent, which later the nasal epithelium learns and then is able to locate and identify. The Killam organ lays in the vomer, which is a V-shaped bone that lays under the nasal septum. And there are 8 sensory nerves that go up the vomer and spread out across the roof of the throat. And so they can read and analyze any aromatic or light compounds that come through their mouth or their nose. There's also a sensory organ that goes down through the palate to the roof of the mouth. And this is how I discovered this organ. Was I noticed the cubs that I raised were mouthing or holding leaves in their mouth, mm-hmm. for a very short period of time and releasing them undamaged. And I wondered what was going on. What type of behavior was this? And I started identifying all the different plants that were going into their mouth and keeping track of what happened to them. And at the end of the first summer, I found that the cubs had identified 125 different food items and rejected many, many more. And I determined that the cubs were able to tell if a plant was edible or not simply by holding it in its mouth for a few seconds.
Mm. Now, you're able to interact very closely with bears, but what advice do you have for people if they encounter a black bear?
Well, my advice is if you encounter a black bear that doesn't leave, one that's within 25 feet or 25 feet to 25 yards, which we call a critical distance, is to hold your ground, keep your eyes on the bear, and talk softly to it. Now, this may sound like pretty simple advice, but by standing erect and keeping your eyes on the bear, you're showing strength. Your eyes are your strength. And by talking softly to the bear, you're letting the bear know that you're dominant, but you're not a threat. Bears can read our emotional communication, and that is our body language, the intensity of our voice, the intonation of our voice. They're better at reading our emotional communication than we are ourselves. 85% of how we communicate is through emotional communication. Yet because of our language, the language dominates so much, we're not even aware of sending out and receiving emotional communication.
Hmm. Ben Killam is the author of Out on a Limb, What Black Bears Have Taught Me About Intelligence and Intuition. Ben, thanks so much for joining us today on Vermont Edition.
Well, Rick, thanks for having me.